Hello and welcome back to the Happier Life Project with me, Gabby Sanderson, brought to you by the free award-winning mental health and wellness app, My Possible Self. Before we get into the episode, first of all, I'd like to apologise for the extended break in the podcast. Full transparency, I was only supposed to take a couple of weeks off over the Easter period, but my mum had to go in for a heart procedure and she needed looking after for a while, so My Possible Self gave me some extra time off to focus on my mum. Thankfully, she's healed very well, praise the NHS. Okay, on with the episode. Have you ever felt detached from your own life, disconnected from yourself? Like you're an outsider looking in at your own existence. You might feel like you are going through the motions, almost a bit robotically. Perhaps you feel emotionally numb, emotionally disconnected from the people you care about even, or have a sense that your memories lack emotion. Does this get in the way of your relationships and work, or disrupt daily activities? Or perhaps this isn't you, but you recognise some of this in someone that you care about. They seem distant, unenthusiastic, unattached, maybe a bit out of it, incapable of showing or expressing their emotions. If you are feeling unreal or disconnected from yourself, then you may be suffering from depersonalization and derealization disorder. Depersonalization derealization disorder occurs when you always or often feel that you are seeing yourself from outside of your body, or you sense the things around you are not real, or it can be both. Many people have a passing experience of depersonalization or derealization at some point. But when these feelings keep occurring or never fully go away, they can make it very difficult for you to function. This condition is more common in people who experience trauma or other kinds of extreme stress. Swami G is a counsellor who regularly writes about depersonalization and derealization at a coach called life.com. Having personally gone through the challenges of depersonalization and derealization and overcoming them, he created a comprehensive online program to help others fully recover from depersonalization and derealization. You'll hear more about this in today's conversation. How the disorder is more common than you might think, and how and why many of us can struggle with depersonalization and derealization during our life, what exactly it is on a biological level, what are we going through, and how we can recover from it. So, with that in mind, ready to find a healthier, happier you? Let's get started. Welcome, Swami G, to the Happier Life Project. This is a topic which I confess, I guess I knew certain aspects of, let's just say, symptoms that people might have, but I didn't know there was such a thing as depersonalization, derealization disorder. So I think for people that might be like me, it would be really great if we could just make sure everybody understands exactly what this disorder is. Is it worth taking each word separately, first of all, like looking at depersonalization or derealization, or do we have to kind of combine the two? What do you think?
I would say depersonalization and derealization feels separate, but more often they just cohabitate there. If you have depersonalization, you have derealization and vice versa. Yeah. So usually people just refer to them as DPDR or depersonalization and derealization. But to the sufferer, it is a distinct experience.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to understand all about that. So, I mean, I just pulled some very simple definitions to help myself get my head around it. So depersonalization, feeling detached and disconnected from your physical body, yourself, or your thoughts, as if you're an outside observer, feeling emotionally and physically numb, not trusting your memories, feeling robotic, mechanical, or automated. Would you add anything to that?
What I would call like depersonalization and also in some ways derealization, it's like an umbrella term. And it groups all of these symptoms together as depersonalization. Like most often people do experience one or more of these symptoms. For some instances, like people will experience a few of these symptoms, but not the others. For example, like in my own experience, like I never had like an emotional numbing. My emotions were not like really muted. In fact, they were like at the opposite end, where like the fear and terror was like constant with me all the time. But I've talked to a number of people where they feel like they just like cannot feel emotions and they feel like really cut off. And so it's just the defining term or like the defining experience of depersonalization is just a total disconnect with yourself. You feel like you look at yourself in the mirror and you cannot connect yourself with the image that you're seeing. It's almost like you're looking at someone else. It's this very jarring experience. And sometimes you look at your own hands, and this often happens with new DP sufferers, is that you look at your own hands and you're feeling like, what am I looking at? Like, I'm not able to connect that
Whose
this
hands are
is my
these?
hand, and something that you take for granted for all of your life, and suddenly you feel so out of it. And then you also feel like really removed. You don't feel like you're present in the world. You just feel like you're a little bit like removed from everything else. And there is a little bit of like veil between yourself and the world. And now we're like moving towards like a derealization experience where it's not just internal experience anymore. It's just how the world appears to you. The world sort of like appears like a dream. You almost feel like you're floating through a dream. And sometimes you get confused between memories and a dream. You sometimes think like, did that really happen? Or was I dreaming that? I was talking to my friend about this. Was that a dream or did that really happen? So like the world kind of begins to lose its solidity around you.
Just to take that thread and run with it, the I guess synopsis I pulled for derealization says, it affects your ability to see your surroundings accurately. Things might not seem real, just exactly what you described. Or you might feel like you're looking through a clouded window or in black and white rather than full color. So it's very detached, isn't it? From it's almost like you're a what, like a ghost on looking in on the world.
100%. It does feel like you've kind of like lost your soul or something. Like ancient, cultures talk about like soul loss and experience like that, where you just feel like a zombie walking through, life. And that's how you sometimes feel. You're just feeling like I'm so disconnected. This is not the world that I grew up in. Like, this is not my familiar world. Something's happened. It's not like you're hallucinating or like, you're like the colors appear different or anything like that. The world is like, it appears more or less the same, but your perception of it, there's like a slight change. Like, some knob has been like twisted somehow. And so you're perceiving things like really differently. You're feeling things a little bit differently. Your thoughts become like, chaotic. You're not yourself anymore. So it could be like a very like chaotic, tumultuous experience, especially because there is not a lack of awareness even among the medical professionals about it. So you would go to the emergency room and talk about like, hey, like I've been going through this, like, something's happening. People in the emergency room would just say like, you're just having a panic attack or you're just going through depression or anxiety, and they will give you like anti-anxiety or antidepressants. Which for some people that might work, but for some people it might not work, or worse, it might aggravate the experience. So my hope is that like, by doing all of this, like we're kind of like raising the awareness so that people know about this.
Yeah. Well, a couple of questions that sprung to mind as you were talking was, how does this happen to somebody? And also, when do you kind of go into episodes where it sort of comes on like a panic attack? If we use that as an example of you might have been getting stressed, all these various triggers, and you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. And then there's just something that switches in your body, and then you experience a panic attack. Is that the kind of thing that happens, or if you have it, do you live completely detached all the time?
For more people, they say that at least once in their life, like over 50% of their population, like experiences episodic depersonalization. Sometimes like people like drive their car and an hour later they don't even know how they got there because they're just like on autopilot.
Right.
You just like zone out, right? Like people experience zoning out. Now multiply that by like 100 or 1,000, you're getting somewhere close to what a depersonalization experience is. But like I said, the statistics is that there's around like 2% of the population at any given time experiences this like chronically for like extended periods. We're talking about months or even years. And so for those people, if this is just like they're constantly living with this disorder, and it's a nightmarish experience. You know, having gone through it personally, I can attest that, you know, it's one of the toughest things that I've gone through.
Right.
And then like coming to your question about like how does one become depersonalized? There's a lot of triggers and causes for depersonalization, but more or less it has to do with two big ones, which is stress or trauma. It could be stress and trauma as well. Like you could have both. What happens is like, let's say, for example, the stress path, right? Let's say you are going through a really challenging period at work, or your relationship is falling apart. You're slowly having to experience all of the stress, and your stress like slowly builds every day. At one point, things start happening. Your body starts reacting to the stress because of like hormonal imbalances, because of like other things. Like we don't exactly know the science of like why depersonalization happens. We know it's related to stress and trauma, but we don't know the underlying mechanisms. But suddenly you start experiencing like the world differently because it's trying to protect you. Like a depersonalization is a dissociative phenomena, right? It's just like trying to like give you a little bit of room because you are going through so much stress. And if you just let yourself go and have experienced all of the stress, that could lead to some sort of breakdown, nervous breakdown. So it's better, it's probably an adaptive measure to just like dissociate. And even though you feel like you're like a living zombie, it probably is a survival mechanism. That's the hypothesis, you know. But if you say this to like a depersonalized person, like if you tell them like, hey, this is just an adaptive measure, like, you know, this is your body trying to protect yourself, they will come back and say like, this is 100 times worse than I've experienced anything, you know. This doesn't seem like an actual protective mechanism. It's actually making me worse. I would take the nervous breakdown anytime because at least like I could just like recover, like, you know, after a breakdown. But this feels chronic and I have to live with this for like months and years. You know, there's like a slow casual progression. And then sometimes what happens is, and this happens with a lot of teenagers, is for example, like someone can smoke like a marijuana or like a cannabis joint and they don't know what to expect or how to handle the effects of it. So they start panicking and they start having a huge panic attack. And then they're never the same after that. So that becomes like a traumatic experience for them. And in that instance, the body and mind has like dissociated and disconnected, and they're left feeling like this for a long time.
So, what was it like? You know, you've mentioned, and this is, I guess, your motivation for helping others that suffer as well. Like, what was it like for you living with this disorder day to day?
It was, like I said, probably I think the hardest experience for me to go through because the problem was I'd moved to a new country. I came to the US and I didn't have my support structure that I had at home. And that coupled with starting work here and like getting accustomed to this kind of culture, a new culture, and it added like so much stress. And I was also like, you know, practicing like a really strict diet. So I wasn't like really nourishing my body too. So coupled with a whole bunch of factors, like led me to start experiencing depersonalization again. And I couldn't like really rely on anybody at all because I had just like moved to a new city at that point and I didn't have any friends or family there. All of my friends were like really far away from me. So I was mostly alone by myself, and the only thing that I could do was just read other people's stories, other people's experience. And that could be a double-edged sword because sometimes you're reading about people's recoveries and you feel good, but then most of the time you just like are getting exposed to other people's suffering, and it seems like the suffering is just like no ending. And people talk about like going through this for 10 years, 20 years, and it's sort of like you just like just go into like a bit of panic every waking day. You wake up and you feel like I'm still the same. I haven't changed at all. Like this nightmarish experience is still present with me. I don't know for how long I can handle it, you know? So in my own case, like that just lasted for many, like I would say like at least for 2 solid years, I went through like really hardcore depersonalization. But I started, you know, understanding what this was. Like, you know, instead of like trying to just believe my own like scary thoughts, I tried to get a little bit like analytical about it. I tried to educate myself about it. I tried to like develop a solid understanding of what depersonalization and derealization was. And then I used it as a stepping stone to start, you know, my recovery process. And we can talk a little bit more about that in detail, but that's how it was for me, like 2 whole years of like hellish experience and then slowly, gradually coming out of it.
So then, I mean, it sounds, and I'm sorry you went through, are you completely cured now, by the way? If you can,
yeah,
or do you,
yeah.
Is it something you manage, you have to manage?
No, it's like I don't experience depersonalization on a day-to-day basis or anything like that. But I actually tell people, like, you know, they often ask me, like, once you recover, or do you never experience depersonalization? Like, it's not like that, you know. It is like sometimes when there's a lot of stress, like, you know, like you might feel a little bit of like depersonalization, but you don't latch onto it, you know. You're just saying like, oh, this is just, you know, this is, I've gone through it so many times before.
Right.
And it's not chronic. It's just like, you know, once in a while, you know, you just like get hit with a bout of depersonalization and it just like goes away like a breeze.
Okay. So you kind of recognize it coming on and you've got the tools to be able to, because you said not to attach to it. And I think that's quite interesting that you sort of say you can, I don't want to say the word wallow, that sounds terrible. And I keep thinking about the word lonely that you used.
Yeah.
And I think about how everybody, especially since the pandemic, can relate to loneliness and feeling lonely, whether you've got people around or not. And I guess for anybody that's not suffered from this, this is maybe the easiest way to get your head around it. If you think about sort of feeling really lonely, then maybe you can allow it to consume you, right? I'm so alone. I'm always going to be alone. Why am I alone?
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing. This is where I'm going with this. Is it where you shouldn't play with the depersonalization?
Yeah.
Sorry,
I mean, there's a
bit humbly. It's just you're educating me as well as everybody else.
No, I think you are like leading me into the right path, because this is important to talk, because a lot of people start ruminating and just like wallowing in depersonalization, and it's not their fault. You know, like when you get hit with such a disorder, this experience is so new to you and there's not much, you know, awareness among the medical community. You are just trying to handle this and you're trying to do the best you can, and most of the time you just like start believing in all of these like self-defeating thoughts. You start asking like all of these like what if questions, and then like one thought just leads to another, and it just like becomes like this like storm that starts brewing. And it takes a little bit of like practice to recognize that that's what's happening to you and give yourself a little bit of like space between yourself and all of these thoughts, and stop believing these thoughts, and also like stop fighting these thoughts and feelings. Because you are right now, like if you just let your instincts tell you what to do, that's what you would do. You would just ruminate, you would just wallow, you would just constantly fight, and you would just see yourself progressively getting worse every day, or just staying the same with no hope for improvement. But that's what I always often tell people, that you need to be able to like step back a little bit. You need to start with developing the right understanding of what DPDR is, because that's going to be the foundation, the first step to your recovery. And then you're going to have to like you know, become aware of all of these thought patterns that you're having, and stop believing in all of these negative thoughts or challenging thoughts. You can just let them go. You can experience them, but don't believe in them. And that takes a lot of practice and a lot of trial and error. And then eventually, you can find yourself out of this condition. You don't have to be stuck. Some people get stuck because they don't have the right tools or support, but as long as you have the right tools and support, you will be able to get yourself out of this condition.
So, if you are a sufferer, are you someone that's more prone or susceptible to having another mental health illness, such as anxiety and depression, bipolar disorder?
Yeah, I wonder how much of it is related to working a desk job or a software engineering job. I don't know if there is a clear correlation. I'm not a huge fan of working a 9 to 5, and that partially did cause some of my earlier depersonalization or even some sort of slight mild depression that I was going through back in my 20s because I never wanted a desk job. I wanted to do like I wanted to be more entrepreneurial, and I wanted to do a lot of other things. But now I've come to terms with it. I see this as a pathway for me to get a comfortable life and to get where I want. So in that way, it sort of helps me. But I don't know if there's a strong correlation between staring at a computer and developing anxiety or depersonalization. Is that what you wanted to ask?
It was actually, if you are somebody that has a mental health illness, are you more
Yeah.
likely to get this disorder as well? Like, is it, are you more susceptible?
I wouldn't say so. From my own experience, I had never experienced anxiety growing up. I grew up in India and I had a fairly good life. My dad actually went through cancer and he died, when I was 18. So that period was a little bit traumatic. But even then, as we were coming out of it, I never felt anxiety or depression or anything like that. And that all started happening to me as I entered the workforce, and I felt like things were just meaningless. The work that I was doing was really meaningless. And it started from there. And then the depersonalization was just the last thing that I wanted to experience. It's just somehow that became the climax. But it also, helped me break through. In some ways, looking back, this experience helped me break out of the lot of ways that I was kind of just wallowing in my own thoughts and ruminations and not being able to pull myself up. And in some ways, I feel like in a way, I'm a little bit thankful for this experience for teaching me all of that, and how to live life, how to embrace the difficulties, how to embrace the challenges, and just find some meaning at the end of the day.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if there are any recent stats out there, but just what you were saying about in the workplace, since more people are working in solitary conditions because of COVID,
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if this has increased the number of cases of depersonalization, derealization disorder, because if you're not seeing anybody and you're just, or maybe you're seeing them on a screen. I mean, I work remotely and I've talked very openly to friends and family about how I am really struggling at times with, being in isolation. For me, it was great because I could work over the pandemic, but like now I'm making an effort to go to co-working spaces or to, just go out into a cafe and see humans because I do feel so like you're like a ghost,
It's crazy because when the pandemic started, in 2020, 2021, the number of people that started emailing me or reaching out to me just went through the roof. Part of it is people are just at home, and more using their internet more and more. But something about the pandemic did actually throw people off, and a lot more people, I think, started experiencing these symptoms and disorders because they are alone and they don't have their support structure. So It's sometimes I wonder like how many people are still going through that, like, because of the pandemic and things like that. About the remoteness and like, I work remotely, and believe it or not, I actually like prefer this for me, because going into work and having a constantly like talking to people, like I'm sort of like an ambivert. I can do it, but it does like drain me a little bit. So I kind of prefer to be at home and just like being heads down, getting into the zone, and just like doing a lot of work. That when I do that and I like wrap up my work, I feel like so much better than like going to work and like sitting through the commute. And I've had like some people like tell me like, they feel better working remotely because they don't have to have a face-to-face conversation with another human, which brings like, because when you are going through a depersonalization, you are talking to someone and you are having all of these like, feelings of like not being able to connect to someone. And some people can't even like look into another person's eyes because it's so jarring. Something about a person's looking into a person's eyes during depersonalization like completely throws you off. And so there's a lot of things to process in the workplace. So they feel a little bit better working remotely or working part-time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's making me think as well, and doing my research for this interview, looking into like symptoms, not for myself, but for people I know. And that I was relating. So, in terms of supporting somebody that might not even know that they're going through this depersonalization, derealization disorder, like, how can we help?
That's a good point. Let's say like how could you support someone, right? Like, and a lot of times parents like would write to me saying like, I think my son or daughter is going through this, but they're just like completely removed. They used to be like happy and vivacious, and like now they're just like they're not doing anything. They're just like sitting at home. And as a parent, like you would probably like just feel like really sad if your son or daughter just like has lost the lust for life. You should like try to recognize it. Like sometimes it could be depression, sometimes it could be like other things, but just like have a talk with them, like see what their symptoms are like. If they're talking about feeling out of it or feeling zoned out or feeling like they're not being themselves, then that could be a sign of depersonalization and derealization. The best thing you could do is educate yourself about it. Like, there's many websites and YouTube channels now. Like, when I started, there was just like not that much information. And that's partly the reason that I actually started my website and my YouTube channel. It was just because I wanted to put as much content out there. But just like find a nice blog or a channel that you can like totally relate to and educate yourself about this disorder. Like try to see how can you like support people who are going through this. Like you can't like ask them to like snap out of it.
Being on the receiving end, if somebody is emotionally connected to somebody, but then they're not being emotionally connected back, then it's really complicated.
It's really complicated, and the person who's on the receiving end could like just take it personally, right? They think something's wrong with them
Yeah,
instead of like
exactly.
thinking about like, oh, maybe this person is actually going through a challenging disorder like depersonalization or something else. Probably they need help or support. Instead of thinking like that, you could just say like, oh, something must be wrong with me. Like, this is why like, people like he or she just like stop talking to me, and something must be wrong with me. So just like become aware of these behaviors and like thought patterns, what I would tell people.
So maybe practicing a bit of patience there if you suspect this might be what's going on.
Practice patience and also see if you can like reach out without being like too intrusive. A best thing would be to do is like just like ask for like a casual, like, like can we just like hang out? Like, we don't have to do anything. Can we just like hang out and chill? And just like gently see if you can like broach the subject. Like, a thing that I usually say is like you could just say like, hey, do you want to talk about something? Like, what's going on in your life? And just like gently try to see what's going on in their life and if they need any kind of support. Because chances are like many people do need that support, but for a variety of reasons, they just don't ask for it.
So you mentioned that stress and trauma are the two biggest factors as to how this disorder can come on. I couldn't help but think about perhaps any kind of like substance abuse, alcohol even, or drugs, or could that bring on a depersonalization, derealization disorder?
100%. Yes. Just dabbling in psychedelics to trigger depersonalization. In my own experience, I think that might have been one of the causes. And just I've talked to people who went through like meditation retreat, like a 10-day silent meditation retreat, and then they come back and feeling like completely out of it.
Oh, that's
Depersonalization.
interesting. So it's having the opposite effect of what it's supposed to be, connecting and grounding and,
So for some people, like, people would say, like, oh, you're going through anxiety or depersonalization, you just need to meditate. And that could be a really like challenging thing for someone going through depersonalization and derealization. Because when you try to meditate, like something you're trying to go internal, and you just don't like that experience at all. It has the opposite effect of calming you. Instead of like maybe you should try to do something more like kinetic or like kinesthetic, like hold on to something, or like just like walk in like a grassy field, try to feel the air, try to feel like all the warmth beneath, like your feet, feel the ground. I think those kind of exercises sometimes could be a little bit better than like trying to meditate. For every person it's different.
It's interesting. There's quite a few subjects that we've done on the podcast where, the experts are like, yeah, meditation's probably not going to work for you. And it's usually because your mind is just not in a place where it can be still and tranquil. And if there's racing thoughts going on and all, it's like whiplash, it's too aggressive, even though it's meant to be the complete opposite, but it's too much of a change to make your brain do that. But so what are then some of the best treatments that you can do if you are experiencing this?
So I would like to say, like, there is no like magical cure for like DPDR. Like, I hope like there's some research that's happening, like, that someday we will be able to have some kind of like a treatment that could like help you get out of it, like in a matter of like weeks. But as of right now, we don't have that. So my whole blueprint to recovery starts with building that solid understanding of what DPDR is. Once you do that, you have to work on your foundation of safety, as I like to call it, because when you start having DPDR, you start to feel unsafe at all times. So something like that you just take for granted, like when you're a normal person, you mostly like tend to feel a little bit safe and like sound and just like calm. That just goes away.
Because if your vision of the world is, if it's all over the place, if the sky is red, or is it red? And did I have that conversation yesterday with said colleague, or did I make that up? Oh man.
It's hard. So you have to like rework on building that sense of safety. And then the other important thing that you have to do is like try to accept these feelings instead of like trying to fight these feelings, fight these thoughts. Like try to see if we can just like accept them and let it go. That this is the hardest, most challenging part of the recovery, is to be like, okay, I have DPDR. It's going to take a while for my body and my brain to recover. And they kind of like do. Like, if you just step out of the way, like your brain and your body kind of like latch back on into like connection more from disconnection. But what we tend to do is like we tend to like just fight these feelings. We tend to just like stiffen up. We tend to just like do the opposite of what we should be doing, which is just like letting go and accepting it, like telling yourself, like, recovery is going to take a while and I'm going to be feeling these feelings, but I'm going to be okay with it. It will be a little bit of like walking on the fire, but I have my tools, I have my understanding, I have my feeling of safety, I have my friends and families, if you're fortunate enough to have that. You can build on these resources and start accepting and letting go. And then what I tell people is like also try to see if you can like fix any kind of like underlying stressors in your life. So let's say like you're stuck in a really bad relationship where you're getting abused. No matter what you do, no matter if you feel like safe or if you try to like inculcate a feeling of safety, you can like read thousands of books on DPDR to get a solid understanding. But if that relationship is just like gnawing you every day, that's a source of stress, you know? So see what's out of balance in your life and see if you can like fix those issues. You know, if you do all of these things, like, you know, recovery is just like going to happen over time eventually. That's what I tell people.
I'd just like to do a quick recap because I thought this was really great. On your website, you listed the 10 most common symptoms. I'll just read them out really quick. Feeling detached from oneself, feeling as though living in a dream world, emotional numbing, detachment from others, fearful, intrusive thoughts, distorted sense of perception. Philosophical and existential questions, blank mind, auditory and visual disturbances, experiencing somatic symptoms. I think even without the disorder, people can relate to quite a few of these points here, you know?
Definitely, definitely. That's why I tell you like depersonalization is sort of like an umbrella term. Like the main experience is like the disconnection with yourself and the environment, but you have like tinnitus. Like, you know, many people like go through like suddenly develop tinnitus, and people have like these like philosophical thoughts that, you know, they might be someone that's has like no interest in philosophy, like, you know, not never like even read a book or anything on that subject, and suddenly now you're just like bombarded by like thoughts about like what is space, what is time, are we like really living, or like are we like, you know, existing in some kind of like, you know, in a vat in a brain, or like brain in a vat. It's that those like I'll tell you, like the philosophical thoughts are just a thing in itself, like, you know, like they just like completely rattled your view of reality, because you just like get bombarded with these like thoughts, and they come out of nowhere, and they just make you question everything that you've taken for granted up until now. You start questioning everything, every aspect of reality.
The emotional numbing, I hadn't heard of this term before. What, I mean, you said you didn't experience that. It was almost like your emotions were heightened. So is the emotional numbing thing where it's just like you can't, again, it's, I guess, that detachment from the emotion. You're numb to, you know, you're watching something funny on the TV and you just can't laugh about it, kind of thing.
Yeah, life is just like colorless. From what I've heard people talk to me about this, I would think like the emotional numbing sometimes happens, or most times happens, with a lot of like a trauma that you go through. Be it, you know, you could just like smoke some marijuana, like, or like, you know, smoke a joint and just have a panic attack and something happens from that, or there's a lot of physical abuse in someone's history, and so they just like go through this. Like, I feel like, you know, there's like an activation that happens with depersonalization. Like, you're slowly building stress and stress and stress, and you get to a peak where your brain is constantly buzzing and you're constantly on hypervigilance, which is where sort of I was. And then if the stress keeps building and building, building, you just like fall off a cliff where the activation, your baseline activation, goes below. And so you go into what's known as a freeze response, right? And so you sort of like go, you're not fighting, you're not trying to flee, you're just becoming so numb, and you're just like kind of frozen. And for people who are in the frozen response, like the emotions just like kind of go away.
Gosh, I'm learning so much. I mean, there's obviously you, but it feels like this is still quite a niche area in terms of like getting professional help. Is this something that like I mean, we have listeners and app users all over the world, but we're from the UK, so I'm just wondering in terms of like seeking help, because it does sound like if you have it, especially quite severely, it can be absolutely crippling. How do you go about finding the right professional help, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
It's actually, yeah, that's the most challenging part of this disorder, is finding the help, because It's just like there's lack of awareness even among the medical professionals. Funny enough, actually, London actually has a depersonalization research unit where they are actually studying.
Oh, that's
I don't know if it's in proper London or if it's somewhere in the UK,
right.
but they are studying and like, trying to figure out what is happening with people. So there is like some research that is coming out, but for the general population, medical professionals don't really know about this. So hopefully through podcasts like these and like through other people, like people are able to like become more aware.
Yeah.
But if you don't have any kind of research, like I would say if you're looking for a therapist or someone to work with and you want help with depersonalization, look for therapists that have worked with dissociative disorders. They might not just say depersonalization on their website or on
Yeah.
their roster, but they might say like dissociative disorder. So that's something that I always tell people, like look for therapists who work with dissociative disorders.
Usually I wait until it's like the last thing I say is pointing to you and how and all of your resources, but I think it's appropriate to bring up now that don't you have a questionnaire and a course? So maybe that would be a good place to start just as well if any of this is resonating. Because, like you said, there's the umbrella, and then it could be linked to another mental health condition. It could be its own thing. It could be you've got a few symptoms, you know? So maybe it's like you said, it's getting more information. So how and where do we go to your stuff?
Of course, my website is called A Coach Called Life. That's just, A Coach Called Life. And if you go there, there is a link for a DPDR questionnaire. And there are like, I think like about 10 questions or maybe 15 questions. And try to answer them and see like, what resonates with you. And then at the end, like, you'll know like if your symptoms match with a light form of depersonalization or more like intense form of depersonalization. But I just wanted to let people know it's not a diagnosis. This is like an educational test. Like, I can't like actually diagnose someone, but it's a starting point. It's a good starting point. If you feel like what we've talked about resonates with you, go take that questionnaire and see where you stand on that scale. And once you can like understand, or once you know what you're going through, once you have a name for it, that becomes a good starting point to build your recovery. When it's like really nebulous, when you don't know what you're dealing with, that adds to a lot of stress. But when you at least have a name for it and you know that many people are going through the same thing as you are, go to A Coach Called Life.
Yeah, Coach Called Life, and then you do offer a course.
I
Should
do offer a course. Yeah,
you
it's
know?
called DP No More. So if you go to dpnomore.com, that's my course, and it's just based on whatever we have talked before, which is just like basically building step by step your blueprint to recovery. It starts with developing the right understanding, working on building your safety structures, telling you all about acceptance and how to practice that, trying to let you know how to you find and fix your stressors, and then finally how to recover from DPDR, and most importantly, how to stay recovered. Because believe it or not, like, many people who've gone through DPDR like always get like setbacks. So this is when you go like a week without depersonalization and you feel like you're cured and everything is so, you're so happy. And then like suddenly you get hit with all of the symptoms once more.
Is it, are
So
you
I'll,
triggered or can it just turn up out of the blue?
it's sometimes it's just, it just comes out of nowhere. That's the really challenging part, is like navigating those setbacks. It's not rocket science. Like I've tried to like just get everything into like basics that people can understand, and just like take it as like a building blocks. And once you put things together, like this thing, like eventually recovery happens. It's just your body wants to recover. Like the body knows how to heal itself. Like like if you have a cut, a wound, the body kind of like heals itself, right? So there, I think there is like a healing power in like the mind as well, like in the mental psyche as well. So even if there's like a wound, like a mental wound, the mind does know how to heal itself. Like it will get back to balance. And all we have to do is like give it the pathway, like just move aside and let it do its healing work.
Love that. Well, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for the education today. I can't let you go before we wrap up every episode of the Happier Life Project with the last five in five. So that's the same five questions that I ask every guest to close the episode.
Oh, awesome.
Okay. When and where are you at your happiest?
When I'm immersed in an activity, it could be making music, it could be writing code. Like, if I'm working on a project, I could just lose 10 hours, like just writing code, making music, playing my drums. So
No.
those kinds of activities are like my favorite things to do.
What's your favorite thing to do that nourishes your mental health?
The said, like with the activities that I just mentioned, but also just like, spending time with my girlfriend and just like going on trips. We recently were like in Austin for a wedding. And it was like a totally much needed break.
What piece of advice do you now know that you wished somebody would have told you earlier that would have made you a happier person?
I would say don't believe all the thoughts in your head. Become a little bit aware, of like the thoughts that are going on in our head. Not all of them are true.
What is the most important one thing that needs to change to make the world a happier place?
Oh my God.
I know.
It's a little above my pay grade, but I think just understanding that you are part of the whole and not just like an individual, that you are part of a whole. And I'm not saying I'm there, but I like to think of myself like, I am part of this world and I'm not just like by myself. So like, I would say like start helping people like in a small circle and just keep expanding that circle. Maybe that's the way to go do it.
Okay, final question. What is a simple, actionable step we can take when it comes to, I'm going to kind of make this relatable to everybody, when it comes to moments of feeling disconnected or emotionally numb that will help us live a happier life?
Okay, so this might be just coming like from personal experience. I think getting into a project can really turn things around. It could be anything, like working on your garden in your backyard, trying to make a new album, like a music album. Like for me, always like working on projects like tends to like lift me up. If I can like get into something, there's a lot of like positive feedback that happens to me. So
Oh, I love
like
that.
just cut yourself some slack, just like find the tiniest little project that you can like do and commit to it and do that and see where that takes you.
Thank you so much for today, Swami. It's been
Of course.
enlightening. Do we point to socials as well? I know we've done the kind of business side, but do you want people to find you on like YouTube, for example?
Yes, on YouTube, if you just look for Swami G, that's SWAMY space G. You should see my face there. And one more thing, I actually just recently launched an AI-powered chatbot called DPDR.chat. And it's a free chat service. It's kind of like ChatGPT, but for people who are going through depersonalization and derealization. That's another project that I got into that like really like gotten my juices flowing.
Yeah.
So I have a soft launch and it's out there. So if you feel like you need some kind of help, if you don't know where to start, just go
Yeah.
to dpdr.chat and see if you can get the support you need.
DPDR dot chat. DPDR
Yeah.
dot chat. Okay. Just want to make sure we get
Exactly.
that. Great
Yeah.
stuff. Thank you again. Super fascinating. Yeah.
Awesome.
I think everybody can relate. Even if you don't have the disorder, you certainly have some of the symptoms from time to time.
It's a universal human experience to have some of these symptoms and go through depersonalization or derealization every now and then. Like you're not alone. Many people are going through it.
Hello, it's Gabby back with you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Happier Life Project. Just one more minute of your time before I sign off with the all important housekeeping. If you are suffering with your mental health, there is a crisis button on the My Possible Self app, which will signpost you to the correct information for immediate expert advice. those of you who are listening on one of the podcast platforms, the My Possible Self app is completely free to download and access all of the content, so you don't need to worry about it costing you anything. If you are in crisis or you think you may have an emergency, please call your doctor or the emergency services immediately. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the interviewer, which is me, and the interviewees. The content of this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for professional or medical advice. Our partners at the Priory Healthcare are not involved in the production or content of this podcast. If you found the episode helpful or you think it might be beneficial to a friend or loved one of yours, please do share it. And if you do have the time to leave us a review, that always goes very, very much appreciated. And to find and follow us on social media, we are at My Possible Self and I've been at Radio Gabby. Do take care and I'll see you on the next one. Bye for now.